Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 15th of February. Later this morning, the president will be in Central City, Milwaukee at Master Lock. The White House released this press statement earlier today. Today, the president will travel to Master Lock Company in Milwaukee to discuss his blueprint for an America built to last, which invests in American manufacturing by encouraging companies to create manufacturing jobs in this country while removing deductions for shipping jobs overseas and encouraging insourcing. Master Lock is the world's largest manufacturer of padlocks and related security products. Since mid-2010, the company has returned approximately 100 jobs back to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, that had previously been offshored. Master Lock is improving productivity at their plant in Milwaukee by upgrading equipment, and the company plans to continue bringing jobs back to Wisconsin. Our guest this hour wrote a recent piece. He does a lot of writing about the economy, titled Daffodils in Winter. If dawn follows the darkness, the Midwest may be recovering from its long night of economic decline. So say a rash of news stories reporting on a sudden burst of economic activity and job growth in some of the most hard-hit regions of the Midwest. Our guest says, for the most part, it's too early to proclaim the Midwest's long winter to be over. Joining us this hour to talk about the president's visit and the return of jobs to the United States from China and more is Richard Longworth. Richard is a senior fellow at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs and former distinguished visiting scholar at DePaul University. He's the author of a book that really captivated us when we talked about it with him a few years ago, Caught in the Middle, America's Heartland in the Age of Globalism. It's now out in paperback. He is the author of Global Squeeze, one of the first books on globalization, and of a MacArthur Foundation report, Global Chicago, which led to the foundation of the Global Chicago Center. He is been an adjunct professor in international relations at Northwestern University, a regular lecturer at Columbia University. He's an Iowa native, so he's got strong Midwestern roots here, and he has won every major national award for economic reporting. He's, for 5 years, been a mentor to Streetwise, Chicago's newspaper for the homeless. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Richard during the course of this hour. I would imagine we'll have quite a few on the day that the president visits the city where we're broadcasting from, Milwaukee. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and our email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Hello, Richard. Thank you so much for being with us.
Kathleen, good morning to you.
Yeah, it's a great pleasure to have you on the air because we like your mind, sir. We remember that interview a few years ago, and you can shed light on the president's visit. Is he highlighting a company that is just one of many that's bringing a lot of jobs back from China, or is this an anomaly?
It's neither an anomaly nor a tidal wave, I'd say, Kathleen. It's good stuff. You know, if Master Lock is bringing back 100 jobs, if it sees the point of increasing its manufacturing levels here, that's great. And there are other cases of this going on in Milwaukee, some here in Chicago, a bit up in Saginaw, Michigan, places that badly need this. It's really too early to proclaim a wave of onshoring, as they're calling it, or resourcing, or whatever. There's various names given this. Some companies are finding an advantage in bringing jobs back from China, but most of the outflow is still the other way, and there's no real indication it's going to change around. You look at some of the reasons here and for why jobs are coming back, and they're a little idiosyncratic. In some cases, it's a matter of factories wanting to be closer to their suppliers. If their suppliers to a big American company, be making stuff 10,000 miles away worries them a bit. There is some question, mostly anecdotal. I haven't seen any real solid studies on this, about quality control, that you hear stories about American companies being upset about the quality of the stuff that's coming out of their Chinese factories. Sometimes it just gets down to a matter of jet lag. If you're an American company, and you're running facilities in China, an awful lot of traveling back and forth across
right.
the Pacific. And if you've made that trip,
get rough. That is a long trip.
That is, and sometimes some executives who have the decisions on this are just tired of going around jet-lagged all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The big thing you hear, and I think this is a real factor in Master Lock's decision, is the wages are going up in China. We thought that with a 1.2 billion population with hundreds of millions of workers, most a lot of them still on the farm, that wages in China would stay down for a long, long time. And that's not true, especially in the eastern part of China, Guangzhou and Shanghai and places where a lot of these factories are. Wages are going up, and fairly substantially. Now, these wages are still considerably lower than American wages. But when you factor in shipping costs and you factor in quality and you factor in everything else, the wage differential doesn't make that big a difference for some companies, and clearly that includes Master Lock. There's one other aspect on this. If the wage differential is not what it used to be, because Chinese wages are going up, but also American wages are coming down. There's an economic theory that says if you make a widget here for $10 and you make it somewhere else for $1, sooner or later, those costs are going to rise or even out, so the end cost is going to be about $5. This is great for people in third world countries who see their wages rise, not so hot for people in Milwaukee who may be seeing their wages going down. Now, I don't know. Maybe you can tell me. Are these 100 jobs coming back to Master Lock from China, coming back at basically the same wages that the company was paying when the jobs went away? And or has Master Lock, like a lot of companies, instituted a two-tier system where new hires, for instance, get paid at a considerably lower rate with not much prospect of improvement? Mm. Do you know?
I'm not sure about that, and Master Lock didn't have time to be on the show today, but they do say that they are union jobs. They highlight that, and usually that's an indication that they pay decently, right?
They pay decently, but that doesn't mean a lot. A lot of auto companies, for instance, are on a two-tier wage system, and these are all UAW organized companies. The UAW has worked out deals with certainly with GM, with Chrysler, I believe with Caterpillar, to hire new employees at considerably lower wages than older employees without the built-in wage increases over the years being promised to them, and a lot less in benefits. Sometimes the wages here, if there's a wage cut, something like 50%. Now, the reason here is that the UAW and the workers really want to keep these jobs.
Right.
They don't want the jobs to go overseas, and they're willing to make those concessions to keep the jobs here. But it does, in a lot of unionized places, this two-tier system is taking place.
Mm-hmm. Tell me more about why the wages are going up in China and more about why they're going down here. You've explained some of the second question just now, but let's hear more about that. But why are wages going up in China? That can't be a bad thing if you're a Chinese worker.
It can't be a bad thing. I think we all thought that there was such a supply of labor there they could keep, you know, hiring people cheap forever and ever, and it hasn't worked out that way. Cost of living is going up in these cities. These are fairly modern, sophisticated cities. Certainly the cost of food is going up. People are eating more. White workers are demanding more. There is considerable labor unrest. It's we think of China as being this all-controlling communist autocracy. As a matter of fact, there are thousands and thousands of protests, a lot of them out in the rural areas every year. But small protests, we're not talking about a mass rebellion here, but literally thousands of protests, some of them reported, some of them not, and this has the government very worried and is paying attention to conditions in rural areas and conditions in cities and in factories. There have been lots of stories that you've probably read about waves of suicides in factories where the working conditions, if not sweatshops, really can be pretty terrible, and workers are cut off from families and generally from a lot of human contact. And this has the government worried, and they should be. And so wages are coming up. There is pressure for this. Low-wage jobs in China are being outsourced to places like Vietnam. The Chinese themselves are tending to keep more highly skilled jobs, which means, as here, that you've got to pay more for them. There's this whole currency issue. Because of American pressure, Chinese currency is going up in value relative to the dollar and other international currencies. This makes China's exports just that much more expensive. So there are a number of factors. I gather shipping costs have been going up, certainly with the price of oil being what it is. Shipping costs have to go up, and this plays a factor. So there's just lots of things that are causing these rising costs in China. No one big thing, and you can't say the costs are going through the roof, but still there it is.
Mm-hmm. And this Master Lock plant in Milwaukee is smack in Central City. The neighborhood is it's a poor neighborhood. It's really a struggling neighborhood. I drive by it on the way to work every day, and I'm thinking as I drive by it this week, wouldn't it be absolutely wonderful if there were more plants that were located in Central City so you could talk about people who aren't making much money, talk about people who don't have any jobs. They're living right in that neighborhood.
John Smith had a wonderful story in the Journal Sentinel on Monday, really going into detail on this, that, as you said, Master Lock is about the only game in town in
right.
that neighborhood. It's,
yes.
it's in a wasteland that used to be, Briggs & Stratton was there, everybody was there, and it used to be a terrific industrial corridor, and it is mostly blasted out. Now, again, it's great that these Master Lock jobs are coming back. It's 100 jobs. They plan to bring more back in this year and next year, but there's no indication, in fact, it's almost certain, that they will never get back up to the 1,300 jobs they had before they started cutting back. Now, again, as you said, you're in an area where male unemployment, I think it's hard to measure, but the best measures I've seen could be up to 50%, which is true distress.
Mm-hmm.
And no, there's no sign of jobs coming back to achieve that. There's another reason here why they're not coming back, or not coming back in any numbers, or not coming back sufficiently to reach that 1,300 job level that Master Lock enjoyed. Apart from shipping jobs overseas back in the 90s, Master Lock since then, they talk about this quite a lot, has automated heavily.
Yes.
And this is part of international pressure, global pressure. Part of the cutting of costs has been shipping jobs overseas, but a lot of cutting costs has been automating and putting in new technology so one person can do the job that a lot of people used to do. This requires workers with considerable skills, higher education, certainly people who probably had to go to community colleges to get these skills. They're good. And the wages they can command can be quite decent, but there just aren't that many jobs. And you talk to factory managers and you say, hey, you're replacing people with machines. We're not robots. You're just, turning your factory floor over to robots. And they'll say, hey, what can we do? It's either that or just close the factory and send all the jobs to Mexico or China. And they're right. It's a whole new world out there.
Richard, the president has said and will say we have an excellent opportunity to bring manufacturing back. We have to seize it. My message to business leaders is simple. Ask yourselves what you can do to bring jobs back to your country, and your country will do everything that we can to help you succeed. How do people who are running companies answer that question? What can you do to bring jobs back? And what kinds of tax incentives are there right now, or will there be, to encourage companies to do that?
Well, there's no tax disincentives now to doing this. You can, you certainly can't give tax breaks to companies that go overseas. You can give them tax breaks for resourcing back here, tax holidays, infrastructure help, certainly worker training help, because if you're bringing workers back to do more high-level jobs here, the old traditional factory worker who went straight from high school onto an assembly line job. That doesn't cut it anymore. So training is a big part of this. But beyond that, there are limits to what you can do. I think if I was a factory owner, I would sit down and I would say, you know, I would really like to bring jobs back to Milwaukee. Is there any way we can do this? And search for this and search for government help, both from the federal government and from the state government, to see what they can do. But there, again, there are limits on this. We are never manufacturing in the Midwest is never going to be the huge job generator that it was, say, 30 or 40 years ago. It's like farming.
Mm-hmm.
Farming, agriculture is in great shape. We turn out a lot of agricultural produce, but we deal with about 2% of the population. It's not a big job creator. Manufacturing is very much the same. The Midwest still produces a lot and still exports a lot. We probably produce as much as we ever did, but we do something like 1/10 of the workforce. If we turn out more, it's going to employ some people, but it's not going to be the huge job generator that supported whole neighborhoods like the one around Masterlock that
right.
made Milwaukee
right.
or Chicago or Detroit or Cleveland these mighty job machines. That's not going to happen. We're going to have to look elsewhere for this.
Yeah. And that is so sad, isn't it? Because those were jobs that allowed you to put a good meal on the table and have a middle-class life, essentially, and it's gone.
Well, you do, and people still think it's going to come back. I think there's a good deal of denial out there.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, any family, any parents who tell their kids, hey, you don't need a college education. You know, I did fine. I didn't have a college education, and, you know, I had a good job on the assembly line, owned my own home, and had a cottage by the lake, and, you know, hey, what's good enough for me is good enough for my kid. That's denial. Any parent who's telling their kids that, and there's still too many of them, are simply stunting their future. Kids have to get an education. Now, secondly, once they get that education, where are they going to work? You know, education, it's nice to have an education. It makes you a more well-rounded citizen, but most of us go to school to learn, to get a job, to earn our livings. So what can we do on this? I would say look locally, more investment locally. Try start new companies here owned by people from Milwaukee who are less likely to leave, who can grow up. It's a long-term project. Milwaukee's ascendance as an industrial center took decades, and now we're going to have to do it all over again. But this is a way to start. There's a third way. And it's I just got done reading a book by Jennifer Granholm, who was the former governor
yes.
of Michigan.
Yes, we just had her on. She was great.
You had her on?
Yes.
That's. Did she mention her trips overseas?
Yes.
Okay, that's the thing. She kind of figured that these big American companies, these big global American-based companies are shipping, they're outsourcing jobs. They're shipping jobs overseas, and they're probably going to continue to do so because that's where the markets are. You're in a global economy. But she went abroad to talk to big global non-American companies who also are outsourcing jobs from their home companies, but you know, all they want is outsource some jobs to here because this is where their market is. That really strikes me as smart. Instead of doing what so many Midwestern governors are doing, which is looking to the state next door and trying to raid companies next door, go overseas, tap into this global economy, which is where we live right now. You know, Wisconsin is not competing with Illinois, and Illinois isn't competing with Wisconsin anymore. The real competition is out there in the globe, and we have to tap this, and I think she got it.
Richard Longworth is our guest. This hour, we're talking about the president visiting Masterlock, based here in Central City, Milwaukee. He will give a speech. He will be arriving in the city later this morning, and we're talking about why Masterlock has received so much attention in a presidential visit earlier in the State of the Union address, what it takes to bring jobs back from China, what's going on internationally now in terms of Chinese wages, American wages, and, of course, an underlying important conversation is the huge number of manufacturing jobs that we used to have here in Milwaukee and in other places in the Midwest simply won't return in the numbers so that we used to have. So what can replace those. Richard has really analyzed this for a long time. He's a fellow at the Council on Global Affairs in Chicago. He is author of Caught in the Middle, America's Heartland in the Age of Globalism. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program this Wednesday, the co-authors of News for All the People, The Epic Story of Race and the American Media, Juan Gonzalez and Joseph Torres, will be joining us, and they have done an exhaustive history of the American media going way back to when the country was founded. You'll be very surprised to hear, if you don't already know the story, about how many minority newspapers there were in this country, many of them. All right, let's go to phone calls. Jean in Wauwatosa. Hi, Jean.
Hi, good morning. I just would like to talk about my husband's company. It's an amazing company. They're an electrical manufacturing, so they support utility companies here in America. They have a huge compound in Chicago, but they're international, so they have the markets in Brazil, Mexico, China. They also they believe in training their employees, giving them that education so that they can become management, and they educate them on the processes. They have the benefits. They pay for overtime. The one thing that I notice is with a lot of companies around here is they hire the temporary workers for a particular job that they need to do, and then they are done with them. So then those temp workers, great, they get a little bit of work, but they don't have the benefits, and they don't have the consistency. So I'm assuming these master lock jobs are permanent, full-time, and that's just something to be applauded. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much for your call. Well, it's always good to hear about good companies, Richard.
Well, we need more companies like that. A lot of companies say they can't afford to do this, that they're in competition with other companies that are slashing costs and moving jobs overseas. This company seems to be in an area where it can afford to do that, and with a great deal of responsibility for its employers or employees. It sounds still like a locally owned company, which has a lot to do with it. Masterlock is a locally owned company and still has that sort of loyalty to Milwaukee. As ownership goes elsewhere, that sort of that sort of paternalistic attitude, if you will, tends to fray around the edges. But there are still enough companies, and you run into them all the time, that are preserving as many jobs here as they can to great effect. Mm-hmm. It's nice to see.
Alan in Appleton. Hi, Alan.
Hi. I wanted to bring up the idea of worker safety, and from what I've heard, it's all anecdotal evidence, but that a lot of other countries don't really worry about worker safety nearly as much as we do, and I actually think it's starting to bring down how we treat workers in this country. I mean, when you look at unions, they're definitely not as powerful. And I was working about 3 months ago. I was working over in Detroit, and the project manager on this, I was there for about a month. The project manager on this job asked me to install something on this machine that was running, and this is a very large machine, and meant I had to crawl into an area where there were moving parts around by me. And I told him, no, I'm not. There's no way I'm going to do that with this machine running. And the machine never stopped, so it wasn't until they went to a shutdown. And, I'm trying to think in the 15 years I've been in the workforce, that if anybody ever would ask me to do that before, and how many people, that need a job would do that now. So, and there's also some quality issues. I've seen parts that have come from China that are on fire trucks that I've held in my hand, and I've seen the prints for them, and they're supposed to be a certain wall thickness because they're high pressure. And I know for a fact they're not. But these companies just let this stuff pass because it's cheap.
To your first point, aren't there protections for workers so that Alan wouldn't have to subject himself to a dangerous situation like that, Richard?
They are, but they're being weakened. And I think Alan gets to a really important point here, is that the working conditions, as we all know in American factories at one time, were pretty savage and extremely dangerous. And over the years, largely because of union pressure, political pressure, we constructed here a whole set of worker protection laws, OSHA, other laws and regulations that required employers here in the United States to treat workers and worker safety seriously. And those laws worked. Now, industry, by and large, and the economy has escaped the, you know, the bounds of the United States and has escaped the reach of American law. They're operating in countries where these laws simply don't apply. And so the fact is, yes, I've been in Chinese factories, and a lot of the worker conditions there are pretty sloppy, sometimes dangerous, sometimes just careless. Workers are not required to have proper safety conditions. As far as I know, you know, I've heard of no horror stories about huge industrial accidents, but I'm sure they go on. But the fact is that companies operating there, operating under Chinese law or operating under law in other countries, obeying those laws, don't have to keep the same standards that they do here. Now, these standards cost money, and so that is an added cost on a company doing business here that it doesn't have to face if it goes overseas, which obviously is an incentive to go overseas. You asked what the federal government could do as far as taxation and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Here's one thing they could do. I think we're going to have to come to this because we are in a global economy now. When we are in a national economy, national laws work. In a global economy, national laws don't work. We are going to have an extension of laws around the world to control worker safety. Not necessarily pay, but working conditions, certainly environmental laws, other things, to level the playing field here. There's a model for this. It's the World Trade Organization in Geneva, which regulates world trade and really has teeth. It can enforce its decisions. Good for it, but it doesn't apply to issues like labor or environmental. Now, there are other things, the International Labor Organization, also in Geneva. There's a World Environmental Organization. They exist. They're there, but they don't have teeth. And one thing I would like to see is not an international or a global government, but that's not what I'm talking about, but some sort of global governance. And so workers in China, as well in the
right.
United States, would enjoy these protections.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the fact is, and I think Alan got to it, that the simple economic pressure is going to erode protections here, just as it's eroding salaries.
And those stories are so troubling. A lot of people were so troubled by those stories about China and Apple that came out just a little while ago.
Oh, I saw those, yes. if companies can do this, the fact is, we talked earlier about Master Lock being a Milwaukee company. An earlier caller talked about the electrical company, which I gather is locally owned. The fact is, so many of these big corporations, like Apple, they may be based in the United States, but they're not really American corporations. They are global corporations
right.
operating globally with their eye on global workers, global education,
yes.
global markets. They don't have that sort. They simply don't have the interest of American workers because most of their workers anymore are not American. A locally owned company can do this, but they are a dwindling breed.
So if we're going to look at massive numbers of jobs returning to the United States, you'd have to persuade, I don't know how you would do it, some of those global companies to come on home.
You would, and I don't know how you do it. If we have there's a big insurance company here in Chicago called Aon, which was locally founded. You know, one of the biggest buildings in Chicago is the Aon Tower. It's just announced that it is moving its headquarters. It hasn't been sold to anybody, but simply picking up moving its headquarters to London.
Oh,
it's a global company. It feels no compunction about picking up and moving across the ocean. This is it's not really a moral issue here, I think, Kathleen. It's simply a reality of the global economy that no company feels rooted in its own country. Mm-hmm. It may feel rooted in its own community, like Milwaukee, and have some local responsibility. But as far as bringing back massive numbers of jobs to the United States, they don't see that as their obligation, which is why I say that I think we really have to start thinking locally, creating more jobs here, worrying about entrepreneurialism, improving whole things like venture capital, making more money available to people here who want to start companies, realizing this is going to be a long time, and realizing something that we don't know how many jobs these are going to employ. It's a shot in the dark, but it's the best thing that's going.
Alan, thanks for the call. Mike in South Milwaukee. Hi.
Hello. I'm listening to this, and I'm having a hard time dealing with it. I saw President Obama when he visited Racine a couple of years ago. He gave one of his meaningless speeches, and his visit to Milwaukee to talk about Master Lock is also meaningless. What's it going to cost, $50,000, $100,000 for him to make this trip to talk about 100 jobs? And I hope you please let me finish. Milwaukee, I live in the south side of Milwaukee, where Caterpillar was bought Bucyrus. Bucyrus used to employ 6,000 people. Now it employs 1,200. Lattice, which is in Cudahy, used to employ 6,000 people. Now it employs 800. Ellis Chalmers in West Dallas employed 20,000. Now there are none. The problem is not globalization. We've had globalization since Christopher Columbus sailed across the Atlantic. There's always been global trade. The problem is trade agreements. World Trade Organization, as your guest mentioned, the United States allowed China most favored nation status under Bill Clinton. We gave away the factory farm or the family farm or the family factory with these trade agreements. It's real simple to explain why this happened. It's not going to be the benevolence of major corporations that bring these jobs back. It's going to be changes in U.S. laws with changes in leadership that understand this, and neither Clinton nor Obama nor Bush understand it. I've seen the south side of Milwaukee decimated by job losses because of these trade agreements and leverage buyouts.
All right, let's get a response. Richard.
Well, Mike is definitely right that there's always been international economy, global trade, ever since Christopher Columbus, ever since Marco Polo. This is different. This really is different. For the first time, you have the kind of communications, internet, Netscape, fiber optics, you have international shipping, container shipping. You have the arrival on the scene of 3 billion new workers we never even had to compete with before, and all this has happened within about the past 20 years. This is different from international trade. And one upshot of this is that national laws, a change in American law, doesn't cut it the way it used to. As I mentioned before, these companies now can simply escape national law by picking up and going somewhere else. And as their whole identity as American companies begins to fray, as they become more global companies, they are more and more willing to do this. National law can't control what goes on in China. What we need, and it's going to be a long process, and this is what I'm talking about because we are in sort of an epical change, a transformation in our economy. What we need is this sort of global law that will control workers' rights, environment, trade rules, so we can have the sort of protection for this economy that existed back in the industrial age. That day is gone forever. And Mike, I'm afraid, is right that a lot of what the Clinton administration did was done with NAFTA and with the WTO was done in ignorance of where this economy was going. And we got to roll back and do it now. Barack Obama spent his earlier years down in the south side of Chicago, down near Elk Elk Gardens, working with people who had lost their jobs in the steel mills and the stockyards down there. He knows about this. This is not something he's had to be taught from school books. But he is caught in a situation here in a terrible recession, in which he's just trying to keep the recession going. And I wish that he would be able to take some time out now and move us towards more of a consideration of governance structures that would enable us to get some of these inequities in hand. Mm-hmm. But so far, I haven't seen that. Mike is right that it takes more than just crowing over 100 jobs coming back.
Yeah, Mike vividly reminded us of the number of jobs that have left Milwaukee and how it has devastated communities in this area. And there is something, I mean, it's wonderful that Master Lock has these 100 jobs. On the other hand, you think it's just 100 jobs? Wouldn't this be a huge thing if you had 2,000 jobs, or how about 20,000 jobs? Now, there would be something.
It would really be something. Where's it going to come from?
Right.
I would hope that it would come back from China. That's the question here. Is there any sign of that? Does Master Lock herald some new wave of jobs coming back? And the answer is no. We don't see this yet. So where are these jobs going to come from? I'm encouraged by what's going on in Milwaukee with the Water Institute and Water Council and trying to create jobs from water-related companies. I think that is the way to go, and those could produce a significant number of jobs. Will they produce enough jobs, good jobs, to make up for the jobs that have been lost? That is the big unknown, mm-hmm. and I'd be kidding you if I told you I had any clue on that. All I know is you tried to do the best you can with what you've got. You've got all that water, and you've got a lot of water smarts. So, yes, by all means, make use of that.
We do have a lot of water. It's one of the nice things about this town. Same is true of Chicago, right?
I wouldn't wish thirst on anybody, even the Texans.
Exactly.
But the fact is that 20 years from now, if you want to work or live or invest in a place with a reliable source of fresh water, it's right here.
Mm-hmm. That's
and this
a good
is
point.
Something that we really ought to be getting ready for now.
Thanks, Mike, for your call. An email from Dale in Waukesha. One reason Master Lock has been successful is that they've been investing in their workforce. Many workers have received manufacturing skill certification training, and that's made a huge difference in increasing productivity. These workers receive training from Milwaukee Area Technical College. Can U.S. companies compete with foreign employees if employers invest in their workforce?
They can. What you hear over and over again is that the old-time assembly line jobs, the low-skill jobs, the kind of jobs that unfortunately the Midwest had so many of back in the good old industrial days, those jobs probably are gone forever. Any job that you can do with no more than a high school education probably isn't going to be there. But if the jobs we're going to have are going to be more highly skilled jobs, workers should be training their employees, and they should be getting tax credits and other government incentives to do this. We should be pumping more and more money, especially into community and vocational colleges. Again, this is something of what the administration wants to do, but its aims have been cut back. States have to invest much more in higher education, which is to say post-secondary, both community colleges and 4 years, to give workers the kind of skills to do the job that can't be done by the relatively low-skill, low-wage workers that still make up the bulk of the workforce in China and certainly in other countries. It's not we still have a lot of smart workers here, and they are smart and skilled as the workers somewhere else. It's just the jobs have gone away. If we can take these workers, give them increased skills, at least we would have a shot at keeping more high-wage, high-level, high-skilled jobs here in the United
mm-hmm.
States.
More phone calls in a moment. Later this morning, the president will be landing in Milwaukee and will pay a visit to Master Lock, which he mentioned in the State of the Union address. He will be talking at Master Lock about the economy, American manufacturing, and the importance of companies insourcing and investing in America. The reason that Master Lock has been much discussed is bringing back jobs from China. The company is now operating at full capacity, and 100 union jobs have returned from China. So that's why the White House is paying attention to that company in Central City, Milwaukee. Our guest this hour, Richard Longworth, is a fellow of the Council on Global Affairs. He is author of Caught in the Middle, America's Heartland in the Age of Globalism. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Our number, did I give you it? 800-486-8655. Email, if you'd like to use that, is talk@WPR.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We return to your phone calls. Glenn in Beaver Dam. Hi, Glenn.
Hi. Well, first of all, three cheers for Mike. In my opinion, a lot of these companies that went overseas just for profits are, to me, are un-American. Second comment is there's a number of jobs in other places, and people just aren't willing to move from their communities to find them. And then maybe kind of a radical thought is maybe for the way the economy and the jobs are, maybe we just have too many people for the jobs, and how do we limit, maybe not through immigration, but maybe through our own somehow limit our population through the amount of children we have so that in the future there are jobs.
Richard.
I'm not going to get into the last one, limiting children. The Chinese tried that with the one-child policy,
right.
And what they are finding they have is a lot of old people and not many young people, and they got a aging problem coming. Glenn says that people aren't ready to move to new jobs. People are more than ready to move to new jobs. That's why the Midwest is losing population generally, is people are going almost anywhere they find the new jobs. Americans cannot go to India or Vietnam or China or Mexico. That is not a possibility, and that's where the jobs are going. The first point he made, and I want to come back to this because I made this earlier. He said these companies are un-American. He's definitely on to something. My point is the companies are non-American. Mm-hmm. It's not that they are un-American, anti-American, or pro-American. These are global companies. They may have started here. They may have started here in the Midwest, but they have long since moved so much of their operations overseas that most of their employees and most of their markets are in other company in other countries. If you are running a company, you are going to worry about the education of your workers, and if your workers are in some other country, you're going to worry about the educational system and the schools there, not here. If most of your customers are in another country, you're going to worry about the standard of living there, people's ability to buy your goods, not so much here. This is just a great big shift, an epical shift, a tectonic shift, transformational shift in the economy as we knew it. And here in the Midwest, we grew up with, we always lived with this big industrial economy that was nationally based. Companies were American. When Engine Charlie Wilson up at General Motors said that what's good for General Motors is good for America, everybody laughed, you know, but he had a point. Okay, General Motors is not really an American company anymore. It's still based in Detroit. Basically, it has a lot of manufacturing there, but basically it's a global company, and it's going to think first about its global role, which is why I say we have to sort of rear back and start all over again and start rebuilding an American, a local economy based on entrepreneurs and based on innovations that we can do here, rather than insist the companies who have no real economic reason to stay here do stay here.
Hmm. Bob in South.
Sorry, that is very grim, but it is the new. It is the
it's
new
the
reality.
Yeah.
And it's something we live with, and everybody in Milwaukee lives with every day.
Bob in Southwest Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. I've been enjoying your conversations, and thanks for taking my call here. I have a couple points of interest. One is while the jobs are coming back to Milwaukee for master, the Ford manufacturers have shut down the assembly factory for the Ford Ranger in Minnesota. And now that vehicle, which has been around for a long time in the United States, and obviously sold here, it's not going to be sold in the United States. It's going to be over in Thailand, and I believe the other country is Brazil. But they are not going to ship it back here. And I, for one, I'm a big believer in buying America. I really, and especially now in tough times, I really stand behind that. And I was looking forward to trading my Ford Ranger up to a 2012, and it's not going to happen. And I'm not interested in going back to a full-size pickup truck. And the compact trucks are disappearing little by little in the country here.
So what are you going to do? What are you going to buy?
Well, I have only an option of, others have to buy Toyota, like the Tacoma, or Nissan is what's been recommended, or the S10, which is a GM product, or possibly the Dakota has been taken offline for the year, and supposedly, I'm not sure about this, all the just talk, be reintroduced. But that, if that happens, it'll be one of the few American-made pickup trucks for the compact size, maybe in the United States.
Richard.
Bob, you want to buy American?
And it's getting...
Yeah, I think he does.
Okay. Toyota and Nissan are your choice. They are probably more likely to have been made in this country with American-made parts than anything you're going to get from GM or Ford. GM and Ford, as I pointed out a couple minutes ago, are global companies, and they operate globally, and they source globally, and most of the parts that you're going to get in a Ford pickup probably were made somewhere else. Nissan and Toyota are global companies. They're not really Japanese companies anymore. They're global. These companies don't have a national identity, but Nissan and Toyota have a lot of manufacturing capacity here in the United States, and they tend to source locally. So you probably, if you want to buy American goods made by Americans, contributing to American salaries from American communities, you may be better off getting them from Toyota than you are from Ford. Just saying you're buying American because you're buying Ford anymore. Not true.
Right. And the president is expected to mention Honda announcing that it's going to invest $98 million at its largest auto engine plant. So Honda could be included in the American company, right?
This is what Jennifer Granholm figured out, that we want jobs here. We really want jobs. And if American companies, so-called American companies, where their headquarters here aren't providing them, you go where the jobs are, and if that's in South Korea, and you can persuade them to invest here and create jobs, terrific.
Right. Thank you, Bob. Rich in Rhinelander, hi.
Hi. I just want to remind your guests and listeners that people died in order to try to change the highly centralized planned governments of China and Vietnam. And what I hear him saying essentially is that now that they've become socialist-oriented market capitalism countries, that we have to somehow or another agree to participate with them as equal players on the world market. I'm really tired of the mantra that those jobs are never coming back to America. There are political solutions to this problem. There is indeed the danger of a worldwide recession if there are trade wars. However, somebody has to start sticking labels on stuff that says these are products made in a communist nation, which is a communist nation still, and cares not a whit for people at the lower rungs. I like to think that America is a place where the common worker is given his dignity, and I'm sorry, globalization to me is just a gloss on let's chase the cheapest labor with the fewest regulations across the globe.
Richard.
Hard to argue with a lot of the basic points there. China is still a communist country. It is by no means a democracy. Many years ago as a correspondent, I lived in the Soviet Union for 4 years, so I saw a totally controlled autocracy, a real tyranny, which China is not. There's a good deal of liberty there, but certainly nothing resembling democracy. As I mentioned earlier, the government does worry about worker conditions, about raising standards of living. Their whole, nobody in China believes in communism anymore. I don't think even the Communist Party people do. The ideology has just gone by the wayside, and the Chinese government stays in power because of its ability, proven so far, to raise the standards of living of broad swaths, hundreds of millions, of its population. It really wants to stay in power. It does not want to give up power, and so it feels it is under terrific pressure, and everybody who studies China knows this, to continue to raise these standards of living. At what point do they give up some sort of political control? They say never. A lot of observers say they got to. We'll see. But the fact is, Rick, that we're in a competition here as to whose system is best. They say a one-party dictatorship can do more for the quality of life and a decent standard of living for its people than the kind of multi-party democracy that we have here.
And on that note, we have to say goodbye. We're out of time. Well, Richard, thank you very, very much for being with us. And please, let's not have too many years go by before we chat with you again. Richard Longworth, our guest, senior fellow at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. He has a very interesting blog, too. If you go to the Midwesterner, he blogs the Global Midwest. The Midwesterner, he writes things that are worth reading. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, and thanks to Rhonda as well for on-air production. Another hour to come.